Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Now, this is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
There you go, two in the books, one to go. Final hour of the program right here on the Press Box. Tyler, Pat, and myself as we continue to roll on a Thursday. So we started the program with this. We'll recap a little bit. Obviously, the Astros lost to the Dodgers last night. Jake Odorizzi was bad, and he needs to be better, or he's not going to be on this roster for the playoffs. And that's okay, because you have the luxury of having four quality starters already. Urquidy's, I guess, going to rehab again. Same injury two times over. I hate to say this, but you almost have to anticipate that he may go through it again. But we'll see. You know, the thing is that you don't have to have five starters in the playoffs. So you'll take your chances. Other than that, icing on the cake, if you win last night, you split the road trip 4-4 against three really good teams. I said three because Seattle is one of the best teams in baseball since June 1st. And even without their closer, who's now a key member of your bullpen, they continue to win ball games. They continue to impress. They continue to stay in the wild card hunt. But you lost 2 of 3 to the Giants, but you were in every game. You split with the Dodgers. You beat the. You won 2 out of 3 from the Mariners. And you probably should have swept the Mariners, if not for the colossal collapse and the grand slam. So a good stretch of games against good competition. Here's the key. Starting tonight is that portion of the schedule we've been talking about where you have just got to Mack truck some really bad teams. You have got to take advantage of the situation and do what hasn't really been something you've been able to do all season, which is you play great baseball against the teams 500 and above. You play to the level of competition when you play teams with a below 500 record, and it shows. If you just handle your business from this point out with all the scoreboard watching we've been doing and watching the A's and the Red Sox and the Rays and the White Sox, their schedules are not getting easier right now. Yours is. If you just take care of your business right now, you're going to be in the driver's seat.
And you look at what their schedule looks like for the rest of August. You got the Twinkies coming in. They stink. You got the Rockies coming in. They stink. You're going to go out and play the Halos. They can't pitch worth a damn. Then you go to Kansas City. They stink. You come back home. You get Seattle. Seattle's pretty good. But then you got Kansas City. And then you go to Arlington. And they stink. Next thing you know, it's September. So you've literally got, 3.5 weeks to more or less beat up on the dregs of baseball.
Yep.
This is the stretch where, you know, I always say the best teams in baseball will go on, say, 4 runs a year, where they'll be 14-3, 16-4, 12-2, and the rest of the year you play 500. Well, this is the time for the Astros to go on one of those 16-3 runs. Beat the hell out of bad teams that can't pitch. Get your offense healthy, play home run derby, beat them into the ground, and then you go into September when you're going to have to play some more tougher games. But the Astros literally have the opportunity to go in September up double digits in the division because this is the softest piece of their schedule for the whole year.
I didn't know where you were going with that softest piece, but I'll take it where you directed us. But I'm just saying, look, the fact of the matter is like, and I heard Charlie talk about this too, which I've been mentioning for quite a while, which is you didn't get a bat at the deadline, but you're getting one back as long as Bregman is close. When he comes back, now he's your everyday third baseman, and please tell me I don't have to see Robel Garcia the rest of the year. Because then on top of that, your super utility guy can go back to doing that in other areas when you get Aledmys Diaz to play wherever he needs to play. If Yuli's neck is still bad, he can still play first base. Made a nice play the other night. He could play the outfield if you need, and then rectify center field. Just get me a plan, get a program, and like we said, because of the schedule being soft right now, maybe Myers gets his shot. You throw him out there for some games, and you truly see if this is a guy that is going to be a viable option amongst, do you have options in center field, or your option's going to be Chaz McCormick and or, if you want to be really bad defensively, Kyle Tucker. But that's it. And then worry about your pitching staff. And worry about, not from a bullpen perspective, because I think we can all pretty clearly weed out who's going to be in, who's going to be out. And again, even last night, Odorizzi, all the damage was done by him. The bullpen did their job again. So that's great. Figure it out, what your rotation's going to look like. Is Urquidy going to be in the mix or isn't he? And then Odorizzi back to the drawing board one last time to try and figure out, how do I get more bite and drop on my curveball, and how do I stay in games without keeping a ball that can't stay into the park because I'm giving up monster shots all over the place.
Two big pitches that showed how Odorizzi's breaking stuff wasn't moving. One was a high breaking ball that was just flat. It just stayed high in the zone, and it got taken down the line for a home run. And then the other was the pitch to Bellinger that was supposed to break down and away and out of the zone. And instead, Bellinger barrels this ball the other way off the wall for a double. Bellinger's not hitting his own weight this year. And if he can hit that ball that well outside bottom corner, you know that pitch was flat as a board. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they got to get him straightened out. For people who aren't that familiar with Jake Myers, if you didn't really see much of him in Sugar Land or you don't really know a whole lot about him, he was hitting .343 in AAA this year with a .408 on base and a .1006 OPS. 16 homers, 17 doubles, 2 triples. Oh, and he also had 10 stolen bases.
But it's AAA, Pat.
But the point is, if you got a guy who's hitting that big at AAA, when you bring him up, play him. It doesn't make sense to bring him up and sit him.
But play him when you're playing teams like the Twins. You can't play him when you know what's on the line against the Dodgers. Whether you want to admit it or not, that was bigger than a regular season game against anybody else. That was massive. And also, it's tough because we know that you can become damaged goods. We've seen it in other sports. David Carr, for instance, when you throw him to the Wolves too soon and put him in an environment that's tough to succeed in, it can be damaging for more than just those games or this season. You can't throw him to the Wolves and put him out there in a two-game series against the Dodgers and go, hey, your first two games, have at it, kid. You'll be fine. If you make some mistakes, it's no big deal. It would have been paramount.
When you have the best offense in baseball, you better be strong defensively up the middle.
I get it, but you're playing the Dodgers and Walker Buehler and Max Scherzer. You're not playing a sub-500 Twins team.
You were never looking for big offense out of that spot. You weren't looking for
big. You just said in the first segment, because of the high bar set by George Springer, that you're looking for a center fielder that has offensive capabilities and pop and average.
No, we said we think that there's an afterglow for that, and they're not valuing the guys they had. Miles Straw was hitting, what, .262, .340 on base. He wasn't terrible. He was the eight hitter. If your eight hitter is hitting .260, .270, is getting on base .340, .350, that's better than damn near every other eight hitter in the league. So you obviously weren't looking for monster production out of your eight hitter. They need somebody who can go get it in center field. Now, Chaz has never been really a primary center fielder, but he's got great speed, and he has shown in the time that he has played this year, he can go get it for you in center field. Jake Myers has shown all season long in AAA, he can go fetch it. To not play one of those two guys over Tucker in center, it seems like you're really weakening your defense. And then when you add in the fact of, if you got a guy who's hitting and building himself and progressing the way that Jake Myers did this year, you're stunting him to just sit him. Since he's been called up, he's had 3 at-bats.
Struck out all 3 times. But twice. Like I said, but you put him in a really bad situation. You put him against really good pitching in really tough spots. I get that you want to see what he can do, but this is not a move that's traditionally made by a team that's a World Series, dare I say, favorite, but at least in the conversation for being someone to compete for a title this year. This is a move made by a mid-market team or a team that's, you know, petering around 500 or below that's trying to figure out what their future is.
because they didn't want to go over the tax. They weren't going to get Scherzer. So you've got to be cheap in certain positions. For them this year, they were going to be cheap in center field with Stroh and Chaz. Well, right now they're cheap with Chaz and Myers. Either way, one of those two guys has to play center field because your defense in center, especially with your lack of defense in left, your defense in center is paramount. You can't give up extra runs because your fielders can't go fetch it.
And for like, what, 8 years, you've taken away how many runs between Mariznick and Springer and anybody you put in center field? That was a catalyst to a lot of one games.
All I'm saying is if the guy hit 340 with an OPS over 1,000, either play him or send him back down so we can get everyday at-bats. If you want to develop a guy, guys don't develop getting one at-bat every 5 minutes.
Now, I like that. I'll agree with you there because that's what I'm – if you're not going to play him, then don't let him get stale and stagnant by just sitting on a major league bench to say I'm in the show. Let him keep getting at-bats and keep working on his craft and playing for the Skeeters. But if you brought him up for a reason, then put him out there. But don't put him out there and throw him to the Wolves when you're playing the likes of the two best teams record-wise next to you in baseball. Put him out starting tonight against the teams that you're supposed to just have your lunch. Because here's the other thing that I'll throw out to what you said. I get it that it's not, but this is not your traditional lineup for the eight hitter. Because you know your ninth hitter in the American League is hitting like a pitcher.
Yeah, and look, the Astros catchers, especially Machete this year.
That's what I'm saying.
They're not hitting much.
He's out there for his defense and defense alone. Whatever he gives you once every how many games is icing on the cake. But traditionally, you don't want to go into a lineup where the other team looks at it and goes, well, 8 and 9 are a piece of cake.
And I don't think that you had that with Stroh and with Chaz, even though he wasn't hitting for a big average for most of the year. I think it's like 240 now, but for a good part of the year, Chaz was hitting around 200. But he was a threat. He was a threat to go deep.
All right, and everybody was, well, you're in the National League part. Y'all are seeing it totally wrong. No, we're not. All right, we're just trying to be realistic about what this team is, where it's at, and what it needs to do. So, all right, we got to get to a break.
Question here for you.
Yes.
Based on the way the Astros are set up and your center fielder isn't necessarily going to be a big-time offensive player, but they're going to play great defense and they got a ton of speed, should they bat the center fielder 9 and have like the double leadoff guy?
We'll talk about it next. As most of other things, it's the Press Box ESPN.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Rolling through the final hour of the program. Hey, let's do it again. Texas Trophy Hunters, their 45th annual 2021 Hunters Extravaganza is this weekend at NRG Center, August 6th through the 8th, and you could be there. We're going to give away two tickets right now to caller number 12, 713-780-3776. Caller 12, 713-780-ESPN. You get two tickets to the Hunters Extravaganza. If you're interested in buying tickets, you can go to huntersextravaganza.com. They call it the granddaddy of all Texas hunting shows, and it's back for its 45th year. Oh, Nelly! Look at the granddaddy of all in Texas history. Patrick Creighton's going to be there at the 5-yard line. Fumble! Fumble Rooski, no? All right. Patrick Creighton will be there. Look what the coffee did to me. Fired me up a little bit. Creighton's going to be there signing autographs, taking selfies, talking mess. What are you there? 2 o'clock?
12 to 2.
12 to 2 on Saturday. But whether you see Pat or not, it's a family affair. They've got live gators and snakes. Free active military and veterans admissions with your ID. Also for police and first responders. So poor Marine, you can get there if you want to be there, and others that we know. So good luck. If you're not caller 12, go get the tickets. Go have a good time. Go see Pat.
So Amy Dash, who's a sports law legal analyst, just tweeted out an update on Deshaun Watson. Houston PD reportedly has been inquiring on how it can reach an interview the woman who did the tell-all on the YouTube.
The unwind. Booty patootie?
The unwind with whatever that is.
Yeah, the booty patootie.
So she apparently did not file a civil suit, according to her sources. And she also says she's been told that there are no settlement talks currently happening.
How could you possibly think? This is the ludicrousy. This is how stupid it is to just be so deep into the rumor mill and so desperate for content that this is what you got to rest your head on. How could anyone, any general manager in this league, think about trading for this guy right now? You can't.
It's craziness to me. Look, it's craziness to me to think if you're trying to trade for him and you have no idea what kind of charges he might face, might he be looking at jail time? You don't know what's going on with these civil cases. There is too much toxicity right there to think about bringing him in. But in the NFL, where we'll give second chances to people who, you know, hold women hostage, beat them half to death, body slam them on a bed of guns, who bring guns through the airport, have standoffs with police, they'll give anybody a second chance if they think you can still play football. There's GMs out there saying, well, you know what? If I could just get him on the cheap, I'll wait it out for a year, and then we'll see what happens. Everybody's trying to – how can I get that one, like, super move on the cheap? I don't know how you can touch him. And if you're the Texans, you're kind of stuck with, hey, you've got to let it all pass out and then see what you can get for him. Because otherwise, if you're making the deal – You're what are you going to sell him for? 5 cents on the dollar? Well, why bother at that point?
He's your biggest asset until he isn't. And right now, you don't know when he's going to be available and free and clear of any kind of things holding you back from moving him. But you also realize until he's gone, especially because you're allowing him to be a part of the festivities going on at NRG every day as they get ready for their exhibition season, that he's going to be the number one topic. It's not going to be the quarterback competition. It's not going to be how the draft picks are doing or whatever the hell else they're doing with Cully and Nick Caserio. And thank God we haven't heard too much about one fish, two fish. But that's what they should be talking about this season. But until he's gone, they're not. All they're going to be talking about is Deshaun Watson. And the fact that I said right from the get-go, he never should have said, yeah, he showed up for camp. He did it for the money. But you know you're going to have to pay him one way or the other, and right now this thing isn't going away. So send him home because he's just a distraction.
And the Texans brought this on themselves.
Absolutely.
Because as soon as Deshaun told the Texans, hey, I'm going to show up on Sunday and I'm going to, you know, get my COVID test so I can get into the intake program, they should have right there said, nah, you're not. Just stay home. We're not going to fine you, but you're going to stay home. We don't want you at camp. We don't want the drama. We don't want the distractions. We don't want people chanting, where's Deshaun? We don't want every single question to every single player being about you. Well, guess what happened? Nick Caserio comes out, you know, 30 minutes before camp first started on that Monday, and it was, hey, let me tell you about Deshaun, and then gave you a whole bunch of non-answers. And then David Culley had to give you a whole bunch of non-answers. And then every player, David Johnson, had to give you non-answers. A couple other guys had to give you non-answers. Brandon Cooks had to give you non-answers. And Brandon Cooks loves everybody. Find any Brandon Cooks interview. All he does is
he
say
loves Jack Easterby.
Everybody's the best.
He loves Jack Easterby.
Everybody is the best.
The few, the proud. He loves Jack Easterby.
And even Brandon Cooks won't touch the Deshaun Watson stuff, which tells you gag order. Well, if you want to have a gag order, fine. Send him the hell home. Stop playing this charade of, well, he's out here, but we're not going to talk about it. You look like idiots. You look like you had no plan, which I guess is par for the course.
Pat, I don't think that they did. And I still don't think that they do.
I guess that's par for the course. They have no plan whatsoever. And this is why I can't. I have no hope for the Texans.
But this is why so many people jumped off the bandwagon.
This is why I feel like they're closer to zero wins than three.
I understand
they have
that.
No plan.
But here's the thing. And then you couple all of that with whatever the hell this Easterby charade is. And an owner that would rather play video games sitting on a bearskin rug than sit at a desk and do a real job like a real executive of an NFL franchise. And then you go back into and I hate having to do this to you Texans fans, but go back into the Bill O'Brien era and all the missteps, both on the field and as a general manager, and it all starts with DeAndre Hopkins. And you start looking at all of this and go, this is why they don't want to spend any more money on tickets. And for the first time in the history of the franchise, they're available. And group sales is a thing because the waiting list is no longer. Because people are sick and tired and fed up with the embarrassment this franchise has become.
Oh, Jerome's story was classic. He went from like 30,000 to next in, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
That's crazy to me that many people, they went through that many people of, hey, you're next in line for tickets. Hello? Hello?
To Hold calling on. Let me people try the next and person. Begging them to try and consider buying tickets this year. Calling people and begging them. And I know people in that building. And they're like, we got to do what we got to do. I'm like, well, you know what? You just became the group ticket sales department at the Rockets and the Astros when they weren't good. You were the one team that didn't have to deal with that because you had that massive waiting list. Because it is a football state and a football city. And you had everybody hanging on every move this franchise made for so long. And at a certain point, everybody reaches a boiling point and goes, you know what? Bill O'Brien, insert other name here, Jack Easterby now, and others. I can't. I just can't anymore.
For how many years did you look at, okay, what teams are the biggest laughing stocks in the NFL? And the Bengals would be on
Browns,
the list.
Bears.
The Browns would be on the list. The Lions would be on the list. The
Bears through all the quarterbacks, even though they finally got decent.
The Jets were always on the list. The Texans are not only on the list, they're at the top. And that should absolutely never have happened when, 2 years ago, this was a team that was, 20 minutes in with a 24-point lead over the eventual Super Bowl champions, yep, with a star quarterback, an all-world wide receiver, a pretty good defense. Like, this team looked like they were pretty good and had a high ceiling because you had a quarterback that was getting better and you had maybe the best receiver in the whole damn league. And 2 years later, you're the dregs of the NFL with a roster that it would be probably hard-pressed to beat an expansion team.
If I asked Houston sports fans, because I really, it is painful to think about this, but the parallels are the game you just mentioned against the Chiefs, and let's not forget, Bill O'Brien had a big role coaching-wise in screwing that one up.
Sure did.
And then after the season, it's parallel to after the last game of the playoffs when James Harden says, we know what we need to do. It's like the Texans saying, you know, we're really close and we know we're gonna make some things happen, but we can fix this. Well, no one in any Houston sports fan's wildest dreams thought that meant, from a Rockets perspective, trading Chris Paul, from a Texans perspective, completely imploding, getting rid of DeAndre Hopkins, and doing everything they possibly could to make this team 10 times worse.
Hey, I'm gonna trade you DeAndre Hopkins for my 4-year-old iPhone. Deal!
It's crazy. All right, half hour to go in the program. Still got plenty more to get to. It always involves you. So if you guys want to still get in here, we've got room for you. 713-780-3776. We've talked about just a ton of stuff today. But if there's something on your mind you want to get off your chest before we get out of here, we're here for that. Otherwise, we've got the Twitch and the Twitter options. Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. Been telling you about them for quite a while. Look, Corey and his staff do a phenomenal job. But you know why they do it? Because they cater to Houstonians. Their customer service is great. You know what's better? Their warranties. You know what else? Their ratings. Best in the business. And the products that they use, starting with CertainTeed shingles. And the other thing that people don't know is there's a couple of other things to know about Fitz Roofing. It's not just for your house. It's for your business, because they do commercial roofs as well. And they repair both roofing for your business and or your home. And the other thing is, it's not just roofing that they do. They also do home repairs. They do fences in the yard and a whole lot of other stuff. The best way to check them out is FITZRoofing.com. But if you got an issue that you think they might be able to help with, you get a free no obligation inspection just by calling them. 832-521-3001. They come to you. They tell you what they can do. It costs you absolutely nothing. If you want them to come back and do the work, phenomenal, fantastic, best in the business from beginning to end. They are great people at Fitz Roofing. I believe in them because I know them personally and they've done work for me. They should do the same thing for you because they are the best roofing company in the city of Houston, Texas. Check them out today. Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Ooh.
This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
It's Press Box. Joel Blank, Patrick Creighton, Tyler Scott. We're here on ESPN 97.5. UFC 265 is Saturday. Right here in Houston at Toyota Center, headlined by Houston's own Derek Lewis taking on Ciryl Gane. Well, one of the other big matchups on the main card, welterweight bout between Vicente Luque and Michael Chiesa. Had an opportunity to speak earlier with Michael Chiesa. We'll hear from that now. Joining us right now on the HRMP guest line, he will be competing at UFC 265 in a UFC welterweight fight. This fight could be one that gets the next shot up to the title. And he is Michael Maverick Chiesa, number 5 ranked UFC welterweight, 11 wins via submission, 4-fight win streak. Michael, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right, buddy. So, first of all, you know, coming into to Houston, full crowd. How much different is it fighting full crowd versus no crowd?
It's a night and day difference, man. The fans are the backbone and the beating heart of the sport. So it's been. I feel very. I'm just very happy that I get to compete in front of a full capacity crowd at the Toyota Center. I was at UFC 193, I believe it was, when Daniel Cormier fought Alexander Gustafsson at Toyota Center. So I know what the energy is going to be like. The Houston fans always bring it, and I'm glad to be a part of such a great night of fights.
Well, I know a lot of people certainly looking forward to UFC coming back to Houston. It's, you know, very popular here in the Houston area. We're all, you know, big UFC guys here at ESPN. So your road into UFC is a little different than a lot of other people's. You came in through The Ultimate Fighter, and you weren't the number one pick for Ultimate Fighter. You were like the 5th pick for Team Faber, and you know, there were a lot of guys that were, quote, ahead of you, yet you got through that as the season 15 champion. You know, you fought guys like Jeremy Larson, Justin Lawrence, who was, you know, considered a hot prospect. You had to fight James Vick, Ally Aquinta. You beat Ally Aquinta to win. What was that experience like going through The Ultimate Fighter?
It was a great experience. I feel like The Ultimate Fighter is like, it's like college for the UFC, especially for how long that season was. You know, it was 13 weeks compared to the traditional 5 to 6, like most seasons. So I learned a lot about the sport. I learned a lot about what comes with being a UFC fighter. And you know, it takes a lot of pressure. I'd rather be an underdog, or I'd rather be a guy that gets picked last and things like that, because it just takes the pressure off your shoulders where, you know, if you're a guy that's ranked number one, or you're, you know, the number one pick, the pressure's on you to win. You know what I mean? Look at Tom Brady. You know, he's the guy that, you know, he was picked way low in the draft, and look what he became. You know, so sometimes the guys that are picked number one don't always come out to be the best guy. So it kind of worked out for me in that sense, where the pressure was off my shoulders, just made it easier for me to just go out there and fight.
Well, Michael, you're on a 4-fight win streak since you moved up to welterweight. You've got wins over Carlos Condit, Diego Sanchez, Rafael dos Anjos, and Neil Magny. What, I guess, spurred the decision to move up to welterweight, and how has it been different for you? I mean, you've been very successful since moving up to welterweight. What's been the biggest change for you?
Man, I was killing myself to make 155 pounds. That was just the biggest thing. Is, you know, when I was on Ultimate Fighter, I was tall, but I didn't have a lot of muscle on my frame. So while I, you know, the weight cuts weren't the funnest, that was still the right weight class for me because I wasn't very strong. So as time is going on and I matured more, you know, I got a couple hiccups at lightweight, a couple losses in a row, and just made me have to look at, just be honest with myself and hit the drawing board and look at what I needed to change. And it was the weight issue. So I'm glad I made the jump when I did. I feel like I was mature enough and I was ready to do it. And the results have shown, you know, 4 straight wins in a very tough, crowded division. It's really paid off.
And welterweight is a stacked division in UFC. There's a lot of terrific fighters, and of course, you being one of them. Now, a lot of times, you know, people say contrasts in styles make fights. You know, you are the ranked number five in the welterweight division. You're about to fight Vicente Luque, who's ranked number six. And you know, I've seen you refer to him as this is your the most dangerous opponent that you've ever you know ever going to get in the octagon with. What are the contrasts in styles between you and Luque?
Well, he primarily likes to strike and look for the knockout, and me, I'm a grappler. I like to wrestle and take guys down. But for Vicente, what makes him so dangerous and why I say he's such a dangerous guy is he also has a very high submission threat as well. He's not just a guy, he's not just a one-trick pony. He's a little more well-rounded than people give him credit for. He's got a dangerous set of front chokes. He's got a good guillotine. He's got a good darce choke. And he's got devastating power. So the threat of danger is very imminent, but I feel like that's what's going to make me perform my best is because I have to be, my senses have to be, you know, on high alert. I got to be ready for a lot of different weapons. So I'm really excited to face the challenges that he possesses. It's a good test for me. And, you know, I think a lot of good things will come from this fight if I can go out there and get the win.
Now, I know a lot of times, you know, that I got something, hey, look, let me just get through one fight at a time. But I know it's kind of impossible to not, you know, have one eye on the future a little bit. What would be next for you after this fight with Luque? You get a win here over Luque. Does that kind of put you in line for like a number one contenders fight? Does that possibly get you a shot at Kamaru Usman? What would you be looking to do after this fight?
I'd be looking to fight Kamaru Usman, to be completely honest with you. You know, five fights in a row, 9 years in the company. I don't see why I couldn't be the next guy. You know, and I don't know what they're doing with Leon Edwards. I don't know what they're going to do with him, but I just don't see why I couldn't be the next guy. So, but you know, you hit the nail on the head. I'm not. It'd be a mistake for me to look past this man and be thinking about what I should get next and who should be the next guy. I got to be very focused on the guy that I'm fighting on Saturday night. And that's all I'm looking at right now. I'm looking at Vicente Luque, August 7th, Toyota Center, and nothing beyond that.
I mean, and look, I would expect, you know, Vicente Luque to kind of feel the same way. If he, you know, were to come out with a win, he'd want to fight Kamaru Usman. And certainly looking at you and going, all right, I got to make sure I'm focused on Michael Chiesa or, you know, I'm going to wind up getting myself subbed out here real quick. So UFC 265. Lewis versus Gon from Toyota Center. It's this Saturday, August 7th. Tickets are available at toyotacenter.com. It'll be available on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. And Michael and Vicente fighting on the main card. Now, I know that, you know, with UFC, there's a lot of fighters that you come into contact with. And not everybody gets along. You know, we see this various, you know, stare downs, way offs. You guys just talking through the media. Is there somebody that you would like to fight really for no other reason other than to just kick their ass because they deserve it?
That's a good question. Man, I don't know. There's really not anybody on the UFC roster that I got, like, serious disdain for. I wish I had something funny for the radio to make you guys bust a gut. I don't know.
Is there somebody you might want to break their other leg?
No, I wouldn't want to do that. You know, I had an old rivalry with a guy named Kevin Lee in the UFC that, you know, we had a little scuffle at a press conference. And If I really, really had to pick somebody, that would probably be the guy. But, you know, I don't have any ill will towards him anymore. He's an all right guy, kind of a nerd, but, you know, don't really have. I'm not a guy that really has any bad blood with anybody in the UFC.
He is Michael Maverick Chiesa, 18-4, looking for his fifth straight win, which very well could put him in line for a title shot in the welterweight division. Michael, lots of luck to you on Saturday. Looking for you to put on a great performance, get yourself a victory. Hopefully we'll see you in the title fight soon, brother.
Awesome. Thank you, sir.
All right, Michael Chiesa with us here on the HRNP guest line on ESPN 97.5. No, Michael Chiesa, UFC 265. Again, right here in Houston at Toyota Center. And if you want to get tickets, toyotacenter.com. You can go see UFC 265. Houston's own Derek Lewis taking on Ciryl Gane in a bout that, look, the winner's probably getting Francis Ngannou. So this is going to be a really great card. Looking forward to watching it. One more segment to go here on the Press Box.
Do you ever wonder what ESPN 97.5 hosts talk about during the breaks? Well, now we have your f***ing answer.
I don't know why you got to do it with the FN. All you got to do is say your must.
Just go to twitch.tv/ESPN975 for exclusive uncensored content.
Can you hear my for me?
Is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Final segment here on the Press Box. Joel Blank, Patrick Creighton, Tyler Scott with you. You got about, let's say, 8 more minutes if you want to get in on this show. 713-780-3776. Just talking with Michael Chiesa, fighting at UFC 265, which it's the UFC coming back to Houston. You know, for everybody that I've talked to within the UFC, all the fighters, they're all, A, really excited to be fighting in front of crowds again. And they all recognize Houston as one of the hottest crowds for a UFC event. So this should be a really great event. The main card on this UFC event, this card is stacked. There's 3 big-time fights, and there's even a big women's fight on here, Angela Hill and Tisha Torres, that, look, the winner of this is going to probably wind up ranked somewhere in the top 8 and maybe be one win away from either being the number one contender or being in line for a title fight. So this is a big fight. Both of these ladies, whichever one wins, her star goes back up. And whichever one loses probably finds their way down around, you know, getting ranked 15th and being, you know, 3 or 4 wins away from being relevant again. So this is a big match for both of those ladies as far as, you know, are you somebody who's going to be in line for a title shot, or are you pretty much getting pushed down to, you know, undercard status? Chiesa and Luque is going to be a great fight. You heard Chiesa talking about, like, he's the wrestler and Luque is the striker, even though he does have some grappling ability. And, you know, we've seen a lot of times where when you have that matchup, grappler versus striker, where real quick the striker makes short work of the wrestler. We've also seen the wrestler turn the striker into a pretzel and tap him out in a hurry. So that could be a match where it ends real quick in round one because, you know, contrast of styles, one guy gets caught. Or it could wind up being, you know, a hell of a fight that goes the distance, and both those guys really put in work. Jose Aldo and Pedro Munhoz. Look, Jose Aldo is trying to rebuild himself at bantamweight. And, you know, he's coming off of, you know, a win and trying to push himself into the title picture at bantamweight. So this is a big fight for Jose Aldo. It's either going to be, you know, like the reconstruction of a guy who was once considered the absolute best at his weight class, or it's kind of going to be the falling down of a guy who was once looked at as one of the greatest fighters in the world. And then, of course, Lewis and Gane is considered to be a very technical striker, whereas Derek Lewis is, you know, swanging and banging. Now, Gane is an inch taller and about 20 pounds lighter than Derek Lewis, but a little more precise with his strikes. This is going to be a very, very interesting fight. This is not going to be an easy fight for Derek. This is going to be a very, very competitive bout, and probably going to find out how much of a chin Ciragan has, because he's a big guy and he can absolutely swing, but can he take one from a guy who's got a lunchbox right hand? And Derek Lewis, and he's like, well, you know what? Five rounds, I only got to hit you once. He's right. We've seen Derek Lewis get beat up for an entire fight, and then with a minute to go, lunchbox, over, win. That's one of the things that makes Derek Lewis such a fun guy to watch is you never know. Like, everything could be going horribly wrong for him, but one shot and it's over. I'm going to find out what Ciragan, you know, does, what kind of chin he has, because Derek Lewis is going to catch him at some point. And he does. Can he stand up when he takes it? How many shots from Derek Lewis is it realistic to think a guy can take without winding up on his back? You know, Daniel Cormier didn't take any shots from Derek Lewis because he turned him into a pretzel. Look, Daniel Lewis is a, you know, world-class wrestler, grappler. Nobody else is going to do that. Nobody else can do that at that kind of level. So this fight, Lewis and Gon, this is going to be a big-time fight. And the winner's going to get Francis Ngannou, assuming that Dana White and John Jones can't make nicey-nice. And, you know, we're definitely not going to get, if Lewis and Ngannou fight again, we're definitely not going to get the stare down that we got last time, where both guys were basically afraid to eat the other guy's right hand. So they kind of backed off and there wasn't a whole lot of action. And Lewis won that fight. And since then, man, Francis Ngannou has been knocking the hell out of people. Like, something clicked in him of, man, I'm not going to have that kind of fight again. Even Derek Lewis, he's been, you know, putting some rights on people. And, you know, last time we saw Derek Lewis, he might actually have been in good shape for him. And he's a guy who's had back issues. I can't wait to see this fight. Because we could get a big time knock. I don't see Derek Lewis getting knocked out. One thing we've seen from Derek Lewis is no matter how many hits he takes, like, that guy, he can eat a big shot. So I think if Gon's going to win, he's either going to have to beat him on the scorecards or he's going to have to tap him. And I think if Derek Lewis is going to win, he's going to have to knock him out. But this would be a really fun card, UFC 265. One of the reasons why I have ESPN Plus, and it's on ESPN Plus. You can watch all the prelims and all that. Usually those are all free on ESPN Plus. But then when you get to the main card, that's where you have to buy the pay-per-view. But this, to me, is one that's worth getting. I'm into this. Tyler, are you a big UFC guy? Or, like, select fights?
Select fights, yeah. Not, like, I'm not going to go out of my way to watch every single fight. But, yeah, like, the big ones, I'll watch that.
This considered a big fight for you, or you'll watch it on YouTube the next day?
I'll probably just catch the highlights on Twitter as it happens. Most people live tweet it, and some people throw out videos, so I'll get to see that.
Are you a fan of people live tweeting like UFC stuff, or does that annoy the hell out of you?
No. I think if I was a way bigger fan, then yeah, that would probably annoy me. But at the same time, like, that's how I get my information about it. So,
if there's a fight that I want to see, but I can't catch it live, I'm off social media because I don't want to be spoiled. I want to be like, whenever I get home or like the next morning, I'll watch it then. So I want to see it fresh. I don't want to know the outcome before I watch it. It ruins it for me. Like, if I know what's going to happen and then I watch it, I don't enjoy it as much. I start to get way too analytical about it. And I want to enjoy sports as opposed to, oh, I'm going to break this down. Breaking down fights, there's not a lot of fun in that. I'm not going to lie. There's not a lot of fun. But I do enjoy watching them. I like the excitement. And there's a bunch of exciting fights here on this UFC 265 card. So apparently, Joe Blank is back. And just in time. You have any interest in UFC 265, Derek Lewis and Ciryl Gane?
I want Derek Lewis.
I have a lot of interest in Derek Luce winning. I love the fact that he's getting national exposure again. He was on SportsCenter again the other night in primetime talking about his love for Houston and what he wants to do and the fact that the after party's at Little Woodrow's. But I would love to see Derek Lewis succeed in his hometown and be that kind of story. That it would be great for UFC. It'd be great for Houston and Derek Lewis as well. But that's where my focus is going to be.
You see the clips of Gon's doing an interview on a balcony in the hotel, and Lewis is going down the escalator, throwing up the double rods, making the throat slash motion. I love that Derek Lewis talks so much junk.
We've had him on the show before. He's such a good dude. He's easy to pull for. The fact that he's a Houstonian makes it even that much more important and special. And I'm really looking forward to it because of the fact that this is another chance for him to make a massive statement in his own hometown, in his building in Toyota Center. That's going to be a huge draw for a lot of people locally. It's going to be what a lot of people are looking forward to seeing and what they're going to be dialed into.
I'm excited for 265.
Are you going?
I'm not going, but I will be having the pay-per-view.
There you go. All right. Well, before we get out of here, I want to tell you about the good people at Frankie's Italian Kitchen. Chris Smith, the owner, he not only owns it, he cooks every night for you guys to make sure that you have the most authentic, best-tasting Italian food at affordable prices. It's a family atmosphere. If you're in the Richmond, Fulshear, Katy area, and you want true, authentic, fresh Italian food, and I'm talking about the freshest produce. I'm talking about Italian sausage from College Station. I'm talking about cheese from Wisconsin, and I'm talking about everything that you can possibly imagine. The wings are top-notch. The beef stroganoff, the lasagna, and, of course, the pizza, which they've been known for a long time. This is the place to be and the place to go. Frankie's Italian Kitchen TX.com will get you in the right direction, but you need to know they're open Tuesday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sundays, noon to 8. It's dine-in, it's takeout, it's catering, it's pizza, and so much more. Freshest ingredients, best atmosphere for a family, and the truest Italian food. Check them out today. Frankie's Italian Kitchen. Stay tuned for much more. We're going to talk to you again tomorrow from Beaumont as we head to 5 under. For Pat and Tyler, I'm Joel. Have a great night, everybody.
Put the heat to his heel bigger. Yeah. Now on that drink and oh, some of that. Getting thirsty, now I need some of the drink. So I'm outside of the club and he think I'm a punk. So I go to my heavy, Jerry and pop the trunk. I told him,
research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now. Do it. Do it. Do it now.